Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. The horrific killings on Friday in Isla Vista have sparked an outpouring of personal stories on social media. Over a million people have posted on Twitter under the hashtag YesAllWomen about the misogyny and racism they experience in their daily lives. 22-year-old Elliot Roger went on a stabbing and shooting rampage, leaving 13 people wounded and 6 dead. He targeted a sorority at UC Santa Barbara because he said he had been rejected by women. He left a misogynistic manifesto and videos vowing to punish all women for depriving him of sex. And here's a clip from one of his videos.
Girls have never been attracted to me. I don't know why you girls aren't attracted to me, but I will punish you all for it. It's an injustice, a crime, because I don't know what you don't see in me. I'm the perfect guy. I'll take great pleasure in slaughtering all of you. You will finally see that I am, in truth, the superior one, the true alpha male.
That is a clip from one of the videos left by 22-year-old Elliot Roger. That video, his writings, and so much more has opened a discussion about everyday misogyny and violence against women. The story quickly transformed from one about a lone man with a mental illness to one about what women face on a daily basis. So today we're going to open the lines to hear about your experiences and your ideas for how to combat misogyny and racism in our society. Today we're joined by Genevieve Barrick. She's one of the site leaders and founders of Holla Back LA. Holla Back is an international movement to end street harassment. Holla Back believes that everyone has the right to feel safe and confident when they walk down the street. Hi, Genevieve. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on the show.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Mickey Kendall, a writer, pop culture analyst, and editor of the blog Hood Feminism. Hi, Mickey. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to have you. And Carla Murphy is a reporter for the online magazine Color Lines. Hi, Carla.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm good. Thank you all for joining us. So, you know, it's been so amazing to watch how quickly the focus of this story shifted from the predictable one about the lone white man who had a mental illness to one about misogyny. And the word misogyny is now in headlines in mainstream publications from USA Today to CNN. Mickey, how do you describe how the shift happened so quickly? How do you explain that?
So one of the things I've noticed in all of this is that we've got this bizarre narrative where instead of a sort of in-depth examination of what's happening in a pattern, we keep doing this weird isolated incident pretense. But every single time something happens, it's an isolated incident. It only happened this one time. That's not really true. And we know it's not really true. But it makes it very easy for the conversation to take all of these shifts and sort of perform in this ahistorical fashion.
But why, though, the media? I mean, you haven't seen this before. I mean, the shift happened within hours, going from the lone gunman to one about misogyny and what women have to deal with on a daily basis.
Well, but I think that the conversation about misogyny has always been happening, right? We've seen Twitter conversations when this happened before in 2009 and in other events where men have attacked women, and we'll say misogyny, and I guess because I'm looking at the perspective of someone who's already seeing the conversation shift back once again to an insistence that now it's, well, his first few victims were men. He killed more men than he killed women, right?
Right.
So we had that brief moment where we talked about misogyny, and now we're headed right back towards lone gunmen, and we're still not talking about it as a societal ill that kills.
Well, what are your thoughts on this, Genevieve? Because it is striking to me that USA Today has the word misogyny in the headline, and you don't see that. I mean, misogyny has been talked about in feminist circles and the independent media, but not so much in the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love what Mickey was saying about that kind of idea of the isolated incident, because really, Holla Back, one of the interesting things that's happened is that because these stories build up, just like that hashtag started to build. On the Holla Back site, for instance, you can actually, the incidents written in are mapped onto a map And so you can actually see across the world the sheer volume and the clusterings of incidents and how they sit against each other. And so that kind of outpouring that happens and the momentum that builds is really something that brings those story sharing and gives them power, I think. It becomes a sort of a snowball effect, which I think we really saw with that hashtag.
And Carla, what are your thoughts about the shift in how this is being framed and how people and women around the world are feeling really comfortable talking about what they deal with on a daily basis?
Well, I think the shift happens because obviously increasingly more and more mainstream media is also taking its cues from the discussions that are happening online and within social media. And as you pointed out, within independent media and social media, you know, talking about feminism and misogyny and violence against women, that's their sphere. That's where it happens. And I do think that mainstream media more and more they're also being influenced by those conversations there. So I think that's why the conversation shifted so quickly to misogyny. And as you point out, even the word misogyny appearing in the headline of a mainstream newspaper, that's a huge deal.
Yeah.
I can't really think of any other time previously, and I would love somebody to fact check me on this, where that's happened. So yeah, I think that's why the shift happened so quickly.
And talk a little bit about the Yes All Women hashtag, because that's also getting a lot of mainstream attention. And the idea behind it is that, of course, not all men rape or catcall or are abusing their wives, girlfriends, partners, but all women are affected by the men who do. So, Mickey, what really strikes you about the Yes All Women hashtag? You're a big Twitter user, so what struck you about how women are using that?
A couple of things. The creator of the hashtag has since become target of a lot of threats, a lot of harassment, to the point where she's had to close her account. She's begun to ask me not to use her name, which is why I said, well, we're not going to use her name, things of that nature. And what has happened is that in a lot of ways, Yes All Women gave people permission to talk about these things, but the backlash for talking about them in public, I think more people are experiencing it. You know, if you're someone like me who tweets a lot about these things, you expect a certain response when you talk about street harassment or sexual violence or misogyny in any way, because as I'm sure other people in this conversation know, as soon as you say certain magic words, you have the not all men trolls show up in your mentions and they camp out. And then they berate you for talking about the problem. And so the hashtag gave a lot of people both the experience of being able to talk about what's been happening and also, unfortunately, lessening what happens when they talk about it. Because we've seen four or five tags in response that are getting worse. There's one that there's even a go get raped tag now.
Wow. Well, and also, not everybody uses Twitter. So, Carla, I understand you don't use Twitter, right?
Oh, no. I do use Twitter. I purposely actually don't have extended conversations on Twitter.
Okay.
But I do use Twitter. I'm on Twitter all the time.
Okay. So for people who don't use Twitter, I mean, we've got listeners who don't have computers, and I just want to explain to them how this has taken off and how it works. So, Mickey, you're a big Twitter user. Can you explain that for people who aren't familiar with how it works?
Okay. So what happens is that someone starts a hashtag. They work best if it's a relatively short sentence that conveys your idea, right? So you have the hashtag symbol, then you have, you know, fast show girls, fathers for white women, not all men, yes all women, all of these different things have been tagged that have made mainstream media. And it's not like it's just one person that uses it. In fact, often, you know, for all the talk about so-and-so made a hashtag trend, someone creates it and then the community starts to use it. And depending upon the size of your original community and their networks, tags can only reach 20 people or tags can reach several million people. We saw this with Bring Back Our Girls, right? Where initially maybe that tag didn't pick up a lot, but as more and more users found out about it, more and more users started to use it, and some of them had large networks, more people means more noise. And there are criticisms of hashtag activism that, you know, things stop there. And it's never that they stop there. It's just that any activism usually starts with a conversation, and hashtags make having those conversations across larger distances possible.
And it's also given women a safe space to share their experience. It's been liberating for so many women, including myself. I mean, Andrea Seabrook, for example, who used to work for NPR and now focuses on politics in D.C., she tweeted, "I have been slapped by a boyfriend, stalked by another, groped by strangers, and almost kidnapped by a cab driver." Zerlina Maxwell, who's a political analyst, said, "Yes, all women, because after my rape, I had to call 3 rape crisis centers to get an open appointment. They were all booked. Or the times I've been followed for blocks for not responding to catcalling. Or the times I've been followed for responding." I mean, this is the kind of thing that we are seeing. Just in the last, like, 1 minute that I've been on the Yes All Women Twitter feed, 40 new tweets have come in. So, Genevieve, I mean, this has created a safe space for women to really speak about stories that maybe we don't really talk about that much.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that is really amazing in this is that women can share them with each other, but it also becomes visible. And I think one of the things that happens every day is that so many people take on these experiences as just a matter of every day. And this isn't just, this extends beyond misogyny to all kinds of discrimination. Mm-hmm. That these experiences become quite invisible to people who don't personally experience them. And so just the visibility of creating that hashtag and seeing it out there and seeing people posting the same thing and knowing that people who wouldn't normally see that can actually see it. I do think, though, it's important to say it's probably not entirely safe space. Because obviously when we're thinking of safe spaces, we're thinking of spaces that don't have people appropriating that hashtag to talk, to retweet their own misogyny, who don't create counter hashtags to say things that are misogynist and racist and generally extremely upsetting. And I know Mickey has experienced plenty of that kind of blowback.
Mickey?
I'd love to say something about Twitter being a really safe space. Just want to add on really quickly.
Sure.
Just to echo some of what Genevieve said is that Twitter isn't always a safe space, now is it? And Mickey definitely can speak more to that. The way I use Twitter sometimes is, you know, Twitter is a conversation stream. You kind of dip in and out, and it introduces you to different perspectives. Now, the thing about when you're talking about things like misogyny or violence against women or racism, you do want to be in a safe space, but you also want to be in a space that challenges your thinking. So if you're not online all the time, if you don't use Twitter, you know, I tell people, you know, look at the safe space that you have around you. And does your safe space include people who will also challenge your beliefs? So you want people who will not just hear what you have to say, but who will push back, right? So if you don't have access to social media, if you're not on Twitter, because again, you have to look at who uses, who has access to social media, and more importantly, who does not. We also want the women who don't have access to social media to also be speaking about these issues, and men as well. So you want a safe space, but you want a safe space that is one that is that's also going to challenge your beliefs and challenge your perspectives.
So talk a little bit about that conversation, because once some men started writing about these issues, Facebook kind of lit up, saying, "Oh, look, a man wrote about this on CNN. Men are actually acknowledging that this happens." So, Genevieve, how do you bring more voices into this conversation, and how do you get others involved in this? And are you seeing that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that's been really successful for Hollaback is taking a really sort of target or victim-centered approach to these things. So we have, for instance, some really interesting stuff for guidelines for bystanders when it comes to street harassment, which is, of course, our main focus. And one of the things we do is we don't prioritize confrontation. It's not really about the harasser. It's about checking in with targets, making sure that they have safe space. And then if in that process the people around them make them feel safer, and the climate around the harasser becomes more hostile to them, then that is a bonus. But it's really about refocusing on the victims in those kinds of situations. And I think also that means then that people feel safer to have the conversations with people who may not be particularly pro that kind of idea, or may not have been just exposed to the idea that this might be a harmful thing or a difficult thing for people. Just creating safe spaces for people who are regularly targeted can really shift the kinds of ways those conversations happen, I think.
That is Genevieve Barrick. She's one of the site leaders and founders of Holla Back LA. Holla Back is an international movement to end street harassment. Mickey Kendall is a writer, pop culture analyst, and editor of the blog Hood Feminism. And Carla Murphy is a reporter with the online magazine Color Lines. And today we are talking about the aftermath of the horrific killings on Friday in Isla Vista. It sparked an outpouring of personal stories on social media. Over a million people have posted on Twitter under the hashtag Yes, All Women. There's also now a website focusing on what happens to women when they deny men's sexual advances, and that's also getting now a lot of attention. This all happened, I mean, this has been happening obviously for a long time in feminist circles and in the independent media, but now it's really getting a lot of mainstream attention. You're seeing the word misogyny in headlines from USA Today to CNN. 22-year-old Elliot Roger went on a shooting and stabbing rampage, leaving 13 wounded and 6 dead. He left a misogynistic manifesto and videos vowing to, quote, punish all women for depriving him of sex. So this has opened a very important conversation about everyday misogyny and violence against women. And we'd love to hear from you. What was your response to the tragedy? Every woman has had experience with this, whether it's catcalling, sexual harassment, violence. How do you deal with it? Do you share it? And now that we're talking about this, what should we actually do about it so this doesn't just disappear in a couple of weeks? We'd love to hear from you at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What conversations do we need to be having? Well, we're having it, really. But more importantly, what should the response be to this? How do we get more people involved? How do we get men involved in talking about this and young boys? What is the solution? I mean, there's so many issues here. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. There are racial issues here also. And Mickey, I know you have to leave us in about 5 minutes. So I wanted to ask you, I mean, there was racism brought up in the video rants and the manifesto, but the racism has also caused some rifts within feminist movements. There's a hashtag, Yes, All White Women. Can you talk about that? And what conversations are women having right now about how this really does affect women of color?
So one of the things that has come up a lot has been that once Yes, All Women started, we saw relatively quickly that despite the fact the tag's creator was a woman of color, the focus quickly became on white voices within the tag. And when Native American women were talking about sexual violence specifically against their community, they were accused of being divisive.
Hmm.
So, yeah. So, well, because here's the thing, when we're talking about Native American and sexual violence against them, more than 70% of the perpetrators are white men. So that conversation got really uncomfortable really fast. So Yes, All White Women was created sort of as a slap back against this sudden policing of who was allowed to speak and what they were allowed to speak about. And one of the things that is really been disturbing throughout this whole process is that Roger's racism was both self-focused and externally focused. This is a complicated story in and of itself. And the women who are being impacted by these things are saying, hey, it's not just, you know, this is a comic book of the Holla Back too, it's not just men of color perpetrating this violence, it's not just men of color doing these things. It's not just happening to white women. It's not an either-or proposition across racial lines. And we have to start talking about who's going to be believed when they report and who's not going to be believed and how they're going to be treated and the way societal perceptions of people impact what they then are saying, because you can't feel safe reporting. First of all, Twitter, I have to say, can be a safer space.
Right.
If you have friends, if you have a community around you. If you don't, if you are unfortunately like the creator of the tag, the Yes All Women tag, someone with a relatively small community, it's very easy for Twitter to turn into a horrible place to be very quickly. Some celebs, although not as much in this, but in other conversations about race, Adam Baldwin, I believe is his name. He's the one who played Jane in Firefly. He is a Teacot supporter. He disagreed with something I said. He has, I think, over 300,000 followers. I feel like most of them showed up in my mentions to call me names after he didn't like something I said.
Wow.
So let's be clear about what it means to be Twitter as a safer space and what it means to be of color talking about certain issues on Twitter.
Carla, what would you add to that, to the race element of this? And I mean, Mickey makes a great point about Native American women. Once they speak out about what happens in terms of rape and sexual violence, it gets shot down because the men they're talking about are white men. So what really stands out for you with the Yes All White Women hashtag and the way that people are talking about the race element in this?
Well, this is actually the first time I'm hearing about the Yes All White Women hashtag, actually. Now I'm going to go look for it. But the thing that stood out for me, which is what I talked about on Monday, was in the early reporting of the Rogers shooting, I didn't hear anything mentioned about him being biracial, about how race or racism or white supremacy manifested in his 140-page manifesto. I heard about his rage and his entitlement towards women. And I find it to be a curious omission on the part of journalism. Mm-hmm. So come Monday morning, the only mentions of race I'd heard, they'd come from academia with Michael Kimmel and Cliff Levine at Stony Brook. They'd come from the opinion pages with Jeff Yang, had a great piece on Quartz.com, and also from the blog posts at the from Advocacy, so the Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund, but nothing on race from journalism. So my question is, well, why not? If you're reporting the story and reading that manifesto as obviously a part of what you have to do to report the story out, how do you omit his mentions, his obvious mentions of racism towards blacks, other Asian males? You know, it's a curious omission, and it's a problematic omission. I mean, at Color Lines, real news site, where race matters, and the basic belief here is that you have to talk about race. You have to put it out front. So that was the thing that caught my eye come Monday morning, watching the story kind of unfold.
What did he say in his manifesto about these issues?
Oh gosh, he said a lot.
Because you're right, it hasn't
over the place.
It hasn't gotten much attention at all. I mean, he did write.
Well, he's angry.
He wrote, "How could an inferior, ugly black boy be able to get a white girl and not me? I am beautiful and I'm half white myself. I am descended from British
virginity
aristocracy. He's descended from slaves. I deserve
it
more."
He said that the girl he lost his virginity to was a blonde white girl. "I was so enraged that I almost splashed him with my orange juice. I indignantly told him that I did not believe him, and then I went to my room to cry. How could an inferior, ugly black boy be able to get a white girl and not me? I am beautiful, and I am half white."
And this is the thing, because even as we're going through the manifesto, you'll notice that he does not approach any of these women. He has a very peculiar obsession with white blonde women that means he doesn't actually talk to them. And he gets angry that other people who talk to them then get them to talk back.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. And Carla, I know you have to leave us, so thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's Carla Murphy. She's a reporter for the online magazine Color Lines. And we'd love to hear from you. What was your response to the tragedy on Friday? What are your thoughts on the Twitter hashtag, Yes, All Women? We're now having a conversation about misogyny. The question is, where do we go from here? And what do we do about it? It's your call. And we'll be back after this.
Choose to go.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable, and we'll be discussing media coverage of the deadly attacks in Isla Vista, focusing on what we're talking about today, misogyny. We'll also talk about coverage of gun control, and we will discuss coverage of the ultra-right-wing party gains in the European Union's parliamentary election. That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about everyday misogyny and violence against women. A very important conversation has started. It's been happening for years in feminist communities, of course, but it's now hitting the mainstream. A lot of people are talking about this in light of what happened on Friday when 22-year-old Elliot Roger went on a stabbing and shooting rampage, leaving 13 wounded and 6 dead. He left a misogynist manifesto, videos vowing to punish women for depriving him of sex. And so today we're opening the lines to hear about your experiences and your ideas for how to combat misogyny, racism, and everyday violence in our society. And we've got, we have full lines. We'll have one open in a few minutes at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What issues does this raise for you? And the most important question is, how should we respond to this? There's going to be a rally tomorrow, a Yes, All Women rally at 6 o'clock, 24th and Mission in San Francisco, taking to the streets to talk about these issues, to talk about misogyny, patriarchy, our culture, and how to respond. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Mickey Kendall, writer, pop culture analyst, and editor of the blog Hood Feminism. Genevieve Barrick is one of the site leaders and founders of Holla Back LA. Holla Back is an international movement to end street harassment. The goal is to ensure that everyone has the right to feel safe and confident when they walk down the street. And let's hear from Carla in San Francisco. Hi, Carla. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I wanted to make 2 points. One is about media's contribution to the objectification of women and how that is kind of tied in with consumerism and capitalism and how money really speaks. So what we buy and what we, you know, the magazines we buy and the TV shows we watch and all of that consumerism kind of steers the conversation in terms of objectification. And the other comment that I wanted to make is around allyship with men, and that it really is, it's the responsibility of men to have these conversations with other men and to not necessarily put the conversation always on women, but that patriarchy, misogyny, it oppresses everyone. It's an oppressive system in our society that really we need to work at from all angles.
Well, thank you so much. And I'll add an email question to yours from Devery, who says, just wondering if your guests have suggestions about how to promote conversations about misogyny, street harassment, and gender discrimination with male friends, coworkers, and family members. As a non-Twitter user, I feel more inclined to start conversations in person rather than through apps and the internet, but I worry about facing and handling possible negative reactions. So, Genevieve, what would you say about that? How do we get men involved? How do we talk to men about these issues?
I think that's always one of the difficult things that comes up. But I think one of the things that's also important is to acknowledge that men are often the focus of harassment as well. So there are experiences that we can draw from. There are times when violence is aimed at men as well. So we can make those kinds of connections quite easily. But again, I think one of the conversations we can really have is about the possibility of bystander intervention. And if you're witnessing events happening, especially for people that you care about or people who you can see have no interest or are afraid, simply being able to step in and check in with people, distract, or just keep conversations going about how unacceptable those kinds of behaviors are. But again, that whole the victim-centered, the target-centered approach about creating safety and maintaining that, I think, is a really, really helpful conversation to have.
And Mickey, what would you add to that?
I would add that sometimes it's as simple as sitting down and talking about the news stories that we're seeing, the things that are happening. I know that I have a teenage son, so we've been talking about the pickup artists and pickup artist hate communities that are online and the messages in them about women as sort of an object, as something you get, as opposed to a woman as a person. And I think that sometimes we have to talk about where these negative messages, because, you know, you're certainly going to have conversations with men who will have no idea that these groups exist. So they will say, well, not all men, and not understand that you're not really talking about all men, but you're talking about the men who do these things.
Right, right.
And so you kind of have to show them that these things exist first, and then as they see how large those communities are, because I know that was a last lesson, because my son was like, oh, God, those guys are losers, yada, yada, yada. There's like four of them in there, whatever. It's like, well, no, honey, look at the membership roles. And then we had to have a real conversation about why it's so many men are in these groups and what they're saying and the things that they're saying. And my husband sat down and talked to him, too, because sometimes the conversations have to start with, this exists. Yes, I know you don't do it, but other people are, and it's a problem. And can we talk about the messages that we're sending that make it possible for this problem to exist?
The other thing that's interesting about this is women have become so used to, I mean, I'm not even talking about rape or, you know, abuse, but everyday catcalling, street harassment, the things you deal with, Genevieve, we have become so used to being looked at, stared at on the train, told, oh, you look good as you walk down the street. I mean, this stuff happens all the time. And it made me realize, wow, I just kind of got used to it. I don't like it. It happens a lot. But what's been so great about Yes All Women is, wow, I want to actually tell people that this happens all the time. So
absolutely.
I kind of feel like that's a shift.
Yeah, I think, I mean, one of the really important things that I feel like has happened with the Hollaback site, and this is why we put story sharing really up there on our list of things that are great responses to street harassment, is that just speaking about those things and putting them out. For instance, Mickey, when you were having that conversation, the map that we have and the blogs that we have that just have incident after incident, you can zoom into your local area and say, oh, hey, you don't think those things happen? Well, hey, this happened on that street you walk past each day. Just the ability to pull up those kinds of things and to see them in front of you, to point to them and see the sheer quantity of women that experience that. It really changes the kinds of conversations that we can have, and really changes the kind of impetus. People don't see it as something that just happens to happen to them. One of the regular conversations that we have when working around harassment is the kind of irony of experiencing harassment on the way to change street harassment. So today, on my way to where I am right now, pretty much every block that I walked through, somebody said something, I got a look, I got a gesture, and in some ways it reminds me that what we're doing is important, but of course it'd be wonderful to never have to experience that again.
Yeah. Carla also wanted to talk about the objectification of women in the media. Mickey, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, that angle isn't getting as much attention as it used to, which is kind of interesting. I mean, I think so many women are focusing on the everyday violence and misogyny. But what are your thoughts on just how women are portrayed and the images that we're just thrown at on a daily basis? We can't avoid them even if we try.
Well, and that's one of the things. There was a great piece in the Daily Beast by Arthur Cho talking about how much of the imagery is sort of your princess is in this castle, right? Mm. Oh, wait, your princess isn't in this castle. You have to compete again to catch this woman as object, because we don't see a lot of media depictions of women as people. Mm. right? They're not going about their day doing what they want to do because that's their day and that's what they're interested in often. It's about their relationship to a man or to multiple men who, you know, have a thing for them. You know, whether we're talking as far back as Stefan or Kel chasing Laura all around the Family Matters set, which would be stalking in any other reality, or, you know, more modern versions, Big Bang Theory, where, you know, the cute girl is what he wants, and that's all he wants. And so he's so focused on her that for a long time it doesn't seem to matter that she doesn't want him. Hmm. You know, we saw a lot of that in Roger's manifesto and on the message boards about this idea that they deserve access to women's bodies. Well, no one ever tells them they don't. No one ever tells them that women aren't prizes, because how often in media narratives do you see women depicted as human beings going about their day and interacting with each other, right? We have a few shows, Living Single, Girlfriends, Sex in the City, that kind of thing, that touch on the concept of women as human beings. But mostly, you know, how often do you get to see that? And then also, you know, and this was something that came up a lot, the depictions of women, especially women of color, and how often they're hypersexualized in media, so that's what they're there for. They're there for sex. They're there to be owned and possessed.
There was a website that posted the covers of Vanity Fair and Rolling Stone, and inevitably the men on the covers are in, you know, a suit or some great stage outfit, and the women, 9 times out of 10, are in bikinis and hardly anything. And they looked at, like, the last year of Rolling Stone and Vanity Fair. As someone with a teenage boy, do you think that we need to also, and this is a different conversation, I mean, it's all connected, but we need to have a conversation about how these images, how the readily availability of hardcore violent porn and so much more affects young boys?
I think we have a weird situation where between video games, because my son's a gamer and I've certainly seen some of the cutscenes for certain video games, God of War is one, where part of the thing you can play through, one of the reward scenes, is that he gets into bed with 2 slave girls. Mm. Right?
Wow.
So we have those conversations in my house a lot, because a lot of video games have sex as a special Easter egg. And a lot of porn imagery removes even the barest veneer of what actual non-Photoshopped bodies look like, much less what actual sex looks like. We've seen articles and write-ups and studies in the past showing that porn is negatively impacting some men's sex drives, because what they want is that image. They don't want the real person that's in the room with them.
Right.
And it's one of those things where, as you're talking to young boys, I feel like as a parent, and my husband also does, that you have to really dig into, this is what you're seeing in media. Now let's talk about what that means. Let's talk about reality. Let's talk about media literacy, as well as let's talk about how you're supposed to behave. Because we often will see in these PWPA and whatever boards that they're not thinking about what the women are interested in. They don't necessarily even like women, right? We see a lot of anger and outrage and how dare she have sex with someone else and not have sex with me. You'll even see them say, well, she's a slut because she's giving it away to this guy who I don't like because she likes him, apparently. But why won't she give it to me? Well, we've removed any concept of choice. We've removed any concept of women having autonomy. They're just bodies. They're objects to add and act our desires upon.
Well, yeah, I'd love to do a show focusing on that issue. That is Mickey Kendall. She's a writer, pop culture analyst, and editor of the blog Hood Feminism. Genevieve Barrick is one of the site leaders and founders of Holla Back LA, an international movement to end street harassment. And thank you for calling in, Carla. And let's go next to George in San Francisco. Hi, George. Welcome to the show.
You know, maybe I can inform this a little bit. You know, I was just, you know, hearing this, I think back when I used to hang out on bars, you know, I always used to run into these really angry guys, you know, who thought all the women were heartless bitches, and they just, you know, so much anger, and, they just couldn't get a relationship that, or sex or whatever, and I always noticed they really lacked certain skills, social skills, they really lacked a certain insights. And, you know, I guess that goes back to the early family and stuff. Mm. A lot of it's society.
Did you ever talk to them about this, George?
Well, you know, yeah, but, you know, you really can't confront somebody, you know, who has so much anger and so much ignorance about a certain thing and has so much opinion that they feel hurt. They feel really wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that anger is very, very deep, you know, and, you know. And so, to, you know, it's, it would almost be like an indicting their whole personality. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a very difficult thing to do.
Well, yeah, and it's something that I think we need to acknowledge because we don't really talk about that much. And the fact is, Genevieve, I mean, many websites have been put up in support of Elliot Rodger. A lot of people are tweeting in support of him. I mean, this is another issue that we need to address. And how do you think we should best go about it to talk about men who do have deep, deep anger and have some similar feelings as Elliot Rodger? I mean, it's a difficult discussion to have, but I think we need to do it.
Absolutely. I think one of the conversations that was really great that got started was the idea of toxic masculinities and how there are particular kinds of ideas of masculinity and earning sort of badges of masculinity, which are focused around things like virginity and sex and women, particularly. It's very heterosexualized, involves a lot of violence and anger. And I think one of the conversations that has happened in movements around harassment and assault really does tackle talking about how toxic masculinities don't do anyone any justice. They don't help anyone. The men who are entrenched in them are hurting the women that are affected by them, are also hurting, that those kinds of masculinities really need to be broken down for everyone concerned. And that these kind of ongoing conversations about the effects that those have and about how damaging they are for absolutely everyone concerned really is something that we as a society really need to have.
Do you have anything to add there, Mickey? Because I think that this is a really important question.
Well, part of the problem with the social skills and what society can do, that this part of the debate is that, and that even though we don't want to say this because Rogers had a lot of therapy, is that you have people who they need the kind of long-term intensive counseling that maybe you cannot access without a diagnosis that says you are, you know, you have a personality disorder, you are a sociopath, you are any of these other terms that we don't usually like to interject into the conversation. And what happens then for them is that they go into the world and they don't have, as mentioned, the social skills or the abilities or whatever, but also, frankly, they are dangerous. And we are not addressing the dangerous part because, let's be clear, Rogers, the police were called. They found him charming.
Right.
They found him charming and completely normal. Now, how you watch those videos, read this manifesto, hear any of the things his parents had reported, have these prior instances of him apparently assaulting people, and then say, oh, he's charming and perfectly normal. I don't know, except to say that we have normalized hating women to such an extent that it's then not seen as a problem until violence occurs.
So the police visited and interviewed Elliot Rodger on April 30th after a family member became alarmed about the YouTube videos that mentioned violence. And they left saying that the guy is perfectly polite and poses no harm to society.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That is Mickey Kendall. She's a writer and editor of the blog Hood Feminism. Genevieve Barrick is one of the site leaders and founders of Hollaback. I want to read a couple emails. Catherine in Berkeley says, how about this one? I was a beautiful woman up until I was 45. I experienced a lot of attention, some welcome, some not, and then I aged. Now, instead of attention, I and a lot of other women am completely invisible, or if visible, am ignored like a piece of furniture. Well, thanks for that email, Catherine, and we've done shows about that, but maybe another one is in order. We have another one from Sunny who says, thanks for discussing this topic. I'm a woman and have dealt with and become used to different advances and catcalls over the years. I've learned to just brush it off most of the time or have come up with witty retorts to throw back at men, but I'm still taken off guard at times and feel disgusted. Your guests are bringing up great points about media coverage, and I think that needs to be the biggest change of all because it affects boys and girls directly. I have a baby girl now, and we will keep mainstream imagery away from her as much as possible so she can grow up and have her own self-image be the guiding principles. I've wondered for years what the opposite term of misogyny is. I've never been able to find it, and perhaps one of your guests knows or can comment on it.
So the term is misandry. It's not necessarily as serious, I guess, is the term I want to use here. You're not finding reports of men being killed simply for their gender by women. I'm sure now that I've said that, someone will find a report of an isolated case, but we won't have the pattern of behaviors that we're seeing. Mm-hmm. And misandry refers to the idea that, you know, obviously you hate all men. I've yet to meet anyone in feminist circles who was actually a hater of all men. I have seen it used as sort of a tongue-in-cheek joke in response to men who meet conversations about misogyny with, well, sometimes women hate men and they won't talk to them when we're discussing a woman being murdered for her gender or being raped or beaten or any one of a dozen other abuses. So the term exists. You don't know it because nobody ever uses it.
All right. Well, thank you for emailing, Sunny, and we'll definitely talk about the media angles on tomorrow's show. We've got time for a few more callers. Let's hear from Delphine in Oakland. Hi, Delphine. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Yeah, I really do think that the media perpetuates this. I feel like it's been ingrained in our society that women are supposed to be, you know, lesser, passive, subservient. And so to get it out, I think it has to be a huge movement, and I don't feel like the media is helping or wants to help. I think that, like, all these real reality TV shows, Housewives of Atlanta and et cetera, these women are chasing after men who are not loyal, who are disrespectful, who set them up. But we love it. Everybody watches that. Our children watch TV shows where, oh, mommy is single, we have to find her a husband. You know, I think that to change, we have to change what we look at on TV, what our children look at on TV. We have to stop our children from looking at these things. Also, as well, I feel like, you know, at home is the biggest example. When you're a kid, when you're a young man, and you're raised by a very strong woman who demands to be treated with respect, who doesn't allow a man to treat her a certain way, I think that that would perpetuate them to want a woman like that in the future. And so, you know, I think, unfortunately, it's so ingrained in our society that women are supposed to be passive and take it, and men can get away with everything. And it's really, really sad. And unfortunately, to have that change is going to have to be such a great, great movement that, you know, it's going to take a very long time, I have a feeling.
Well, thank you for calling. We have a related caller on this topic. Let's go to Suzanne in El Cerrito. Hi, Suzanne.
Oh, hi there. I was wondering what either of the guests thought, or if anybody's read, Penny Rosenwasser recently wrote a book about women and the history, and basically the thrust of it is how many women have internalized the anti-Semitism that goes on in the world. And I was wondering what either of the guests thought about, I'm not trying to blame the victim at all, because Penny Rosenwasser's books really tried to herald the women, is whether there were thoughts of women internalizing the sexism and misogyny, you know, kind of like by buying into the media portrayal and the beauty myths and trying to be thin and look like a model and all of that stuff out in the world. So.
Wow. Yeah, we could do a whole hour on that. Mickey, what are your thoughts on that? There was a book written about that. I forgot the name of it, but it was like Girls Gone Wild, I think it was.
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
It's really difficult for women to, it's a no-win situation, right? If you are a woman who does not subscribe to the beauty method, negatively impacts your employment, can negatively impact your relationships, it can negatively impact basically every aspect of your life, correct? If you do subscribe, people judge you for it, they say you've bought in, you're catering to the male gaze, and again, we're back to a place where women who like to look whatever way they like to look are judged for making a choice about their own bodies. It's a no-win situation, because I don't wear makeup, but I like to think I have a nice-looking face. I'm still, without any lipstick or makeup, going to deal with street harassment. it's 95 degrees and I have on shorts and a tank top, someone's going to say to me, well, you shouldn't have been dressed that way. Well, it's 95 degrees and I kind of don't want to melt when I go outside. So I don't think women can win.
Yeah.
I don't think women can opt out of the beauty myth and prosper. You've certainly seen women lose their jobs over appearance-based standards.
So we have about a minute left. I mean, we are having this conversation, and I think it's festered because of conversations about rape in the military, rape on college campuses, domestic violence. I mean, all of these things are getting so much attention, and it's kind of been bubbling up, and now it's exploding. And so where, Mickey, do you see this going? Where do you want it to go from here?
I want people to start talking to their kids and not just their specific born-of-them kids, but it to be something we're teaching about in schools that we're really addressing. When we talk about bullying in schools, right, we want to stop bully culture. Why aren't we talking about stop misogyny, mm-hmm. stop racism? Why aren't we teaching little kids instead of saying, oh, well, you know, little kids don't start out racist. No, they learn to be. No, they learn misogyny. So let's start actively teaching against it.
And Genevieve, 30 seconds, what would you add?
I think absolutely what she's saying is important. Those conversations need to happen. Story sharing, acknowledging how pervasive this kind of stuff, this kind of behavior, these attitudes are. If we really start having these conversations and shifting the way that we talk about what's acceptable, what people should have to deal with on a day-to-day way, I think we can really make some changes in the way that the world operates. And perhaps when those policemen had spoken to Rogers, they might have realized that those kinds of attitudes were completely unacceptable and made a different call.
And the Yes All Women rally, again, is tomorrow, 6 o'clock, 24th and Mission. And we'll put a link on our website, yourcallradio.org, with more information. Genevieve Barrick is a site leader and founder of Holla Back LA. And Mickey Kendall is a writer and editor of the blog Hood Feminism. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you, Bro.
Thank you. And thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss media coverage of the deadly attacks in Isla Vista, focusing on misogyny and gun control. We'll also talk about ultra-right-wing party gains in the European Union parliamentary elections. We'll be joined by freelance journalists Amanda Marquette and Soraya Chamali and the New Statesman's Philip Kleinfeld. Where did you see the best reporting this week? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Debbie Kennedy is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.